You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Listening to the Sticks in the Six podcast. Here are your co-hosts, Andrew Forbes, Peter Barrichini, and Alex Hobson.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to episode 87 of Sticks in the Six. Once again, the voice you are hearing right now is not the angelic pipes that belong to Andrew Forbes, who usually kicks off our episodes. Andrew's off today, so it's myself, Alex Hobson, here with Peter Barrichini. We are going to right the ship for episode 87 of what's hopefully your favorite Leafs podcast. Peter, let's kick things off. How are things going out your way?
Things are going great. As you know, last week or about a week or so ago, on the last episode, I talked about how Rabbit was occupying or like renting out my backyard. Just chilling there, you know, for about a week and a half, I was feeding kids spring mix, lettuce, carrots, flower leaves or petals that just broke off a plant. Started to feed it to it, and it left.
That's so sad.
After weeks of him just living rent-free in our backyard, us feeding it and everything like that, he just decided to up and leave through our fence, just crawl back underneath and go to a different house or to his regular house in the woods. I don't know where he's going off or if he's going off, but wow. It's tough because, you know, obviously it's a wild animal. Obviously they got their own thing going on, but you know, the way that I was just chilling in our backyard, it was like, we owned it. And it was like, yeah, I'm here. And if you got close to it, it would not even budge. So this was very
calm. There was a bit
calm.
Of a connection. There was a bit of a connection.
Yeah, so I'm kind of upset that the rabbit left us, but hey, it is what it is. It's nature.
Yeah, you know what? I'd be upset if I were you too, but at the same time, this rabbit sounds like a little bit of a couch surfer. So,
oh God, yeah, it probably is.
I would say I don't want to plant the idea in your head that this rabbit was, you know, maybe taking advantage of you, but just something to consider when you're battling those feelings of grief. It sounded like his mind was already made up.
It's one of those instances where it's like one of those like comedies where there's a slacker and he's just mooching off the roommate, and then all of a sudden, boom, at the end of the episode, gets his own place kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the uncle between jobs, except he's not between jobs because he never had a job in the first place.
Oh my God.
I know what it feels like though to have a wild animal pet and then all of a sudden have it leave. Except I back when I was in like grade two, my mom and I were out for a walk and my sister was there too. So I was seven and my sister she would have been five. And we found this adorable little baby bird inside of it was like a construction site that I don't know if it was abandoned. I think it was on a weekend, so the workers weren't there. But we found this little baby bird just in the middle of all the rubble. And my mom took it home that night and fed it. And, you know, we got super attached to it. My sister and I, we spent almost all afternoon out with it and then went up to bed. And then we came out the next morning and the bird had passed away. So I have still not recovered from that.
That was rough.
Like, cause at that point I had never had pets before. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this was the first little experience where it was like, oh my God, I've got an animal that I can take care of here. And then all of a sudden it just, is the Rainbow Bridge exclusive to dogs or can we include birds in that too?
Let's include birds.
We'll include birds.
We'll include birds. Why not?
That bird crossed the Rainbow Bridge, unfortunately.
Oh man. Yeah, that's rough. That's way worse than a rabbit just leaving on its own. Okay.
Well, you know what, Peter? This was when I was 7 years old. I didn't mean to throw my childhood trauma.
No, it's all good, man.
But yeah, while we're on somber topics, my week's been all right, except yesterday I was at the Jays game and got to watch them get slapped 10-2 by Baltimore.
Oh, that must have been fun.
I bought tickets for that game because I was like, okay, we've got the Hyunjin Ryu replica jersey, which coincidentally also did not age well. He's out for the season with TJ. And we show up, and I gotta take a second of vents because I was all right. Okay, so you know how horribly hot it was yesterday, right?
Oh, yeah, it was disgusting.
So with it being a Ryu replica jersey giveaway, it was for the first 15,000 fans in attendance. And I showed up with my buddy, my roommate. The two of us showed up there. I want to say we were outside the stadium for like 1:15, outside of the dome for 1:15. And I believe they opened the gates like an hour and a half before the game. Game started at 3:00. So like we were there well ahead of time. And we coincidentally decided to go to a game on the same day as multiple schools decided to take a field trip. And
oh, fun.
The game. Yeah. And I wouldn't have minded this because, you know, I look back to field trips that I made and still I'm not even that old. I'm 22 years old, right? So I'm not too removed from those high school, middle school days taking field trips. So I know that there were probably times when my friends and I were shitheads and there were probably times when adults around our field trips wanted us to pack up and leave because we were being so loud and annoying. And so I was already prepared to give them the benefit of the doubt. However, all of these kids had a little gym bag with them. You know those bags? I don't even remember what. I don't know if
those
I even
spaghetti
know
like bag. The like yeah. The zip uh-huh. The zip that, the one with the straps. Up. Yeah. I saw my Adidas one.
Yes. Okay. So the one that you pull open like that. So these kids, there was in total. There was probably like there were at least 20 of them in our line, but there were probably 60 to 70 of them there, like in the section. And they had, I think it was probably a trip to Toronto just in general because I saw a bunch of them in line at the Ripley's Aquarium there. And then they came and started lining up for the Jays games. So they're all lined up in a regular line when there is a specific line for people with bags to go so they can get them checked. So our line was completely backed up to shit because there's like 20 kids. And let me tell you, the guy who was running the bag inspection there.
Yeah.
My God, it must have been either his first day on the job or he just absolutely loves his job because he was taking his sweet time. He was talking to every single kid, going through the bags, checking every single little item in there. Just like, God. Oh, yeah, what are you doing? Yeah. Oh, nice. All right. Well, you enjoy the game. All right. Hi, how you doing? And then he goes, and it was just this cycle for like, I felt like Ryan Whitney when he was at the airport. I wasn't about to pull out my camera and record an angry video to send to the Rogers Center staff or the school boards. But I was sitting there watching these lines pass us and just thinking like, well, I'm like, I've been
Hello,
in this line.
Can
I've been
we,
in this line too already.
Get this
like
going?
I've been in this line long enough. I can't back out at this point. Yeah. So yeah, finally got in there and I was like, all right, now I get to watch a ball game. And then the Jays lost 10-2 to the Baltimore Orioles. Fine. And Kevin Gausman was on the mound. I thought that Gausman was gonna come out there and deal because, you know, he's facing his former team. I think it was for the first time since he left Baltimore. So
I think so, yeah.
Because he's only played for National League teams since then.
Either way, he's got to work on, I don't know how teams are like starting to pick up on that splitter, but he's got to do a better job of hyping that. He's got to conceal that.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't tell from, because obviously our seats were in the 200s in the outfield, so I couldn't tell if he was tipping his pitches from where I was sitting, but like he had to have been tipping his pitches because the amount of contact that Baltimore's hitters were making off of him routinely, just over and over and over, like, oh my God, it was that third inning was not fun. So, So I guess what we're coming to is a little bit of a forgettable past couple of days for both of us. Hey, you lose a rabbit friend. I lose my happiness watching the Jays lose to Baltimore. The Jays lose to Baltimore, you know.
Pain is real.
There's a lot of losing going on here.
Unless you're a Warriors fan.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, so based on where we are in the off season, there's really not that much to talk about. Peter and I have been sort of kind of scraping together topics to talk about in recent episodes. But with us being lucky enough to follow the Toronto Maple Leafs, obviously there's always going to be something to talk about, which is the reason why we keep this pod going throughout the summer, because, you know, it'll get dry, it'll start to thin up, but at some point you can find some rumor that was started out of nothing and you can talk about it for a half hour. So
even if it's dry, it's never a dull moment.
Exactly. So now where we are is we're talking about goaltending. And the name John Gibson has been floated around quite a bit. Nick Alberta from Sportsnet broke on his Twitter feed that John Gibson had informed the Ducks of a trade. That rumor was since refuted by his agent, but it's one of those things where it's like, how seriously are we going to take that? Because obviously his agent's not going to leak. Yeah, we're actively looking for a trade. So I guess it has since been proven, or not proven, I guess, but it's since been, I guess, confirmed, if you want to say that Gibson is not in on the Leafs plans, or the Leafs are not in on Gibson, rather.
Yeah.
So I guess I can combine this topic with a couple of different ones, because at the same time, Jonas Siegel came out with an update saying that Jack Campbell and the Leafs are still talking and they're still negotiating a contract. I don't know if they've mentioned numbers or anything like that, but they are talking.
I could have sworn I also saw that they were talking once per week since the season ended.
Yeah,
I know I saw that on Twitter. I can't find it anywhere, and I got to do a better job of finding the source, but I do remember seeing that.
Well, Jack Campbell himself is currently enjoying the sunlight in Curacao, so he's probably not taking. He's probably not taking part in the negotiations, but his agent is. And on top of this, David Pagnotta from the Fourth Period did an appearance, a TV hit last night, and he said that if the talks between the Leafs and Campbell go south, then Ville Husso out of St. Louis could possibly be a connection for the Leafs. Mm-hmm. And obviously we're going to do the classic Toronto fan thing where we take a rumor and out of nothing and make it a rumor, because, you know, you look at, he did specifically say they'd be a target of Toronto, but beyond that, there's really no speculation that the Leafs have even been talking to Husso or, you know, have been considering going after him. But David Pagnotta he broke the John Tavares signing. He's broken a number of trades. I don't think he quite gets the respect that he should get on Twitter. So, Peter, I guess I'll throw it to you here. First of all, your take on the Leafs not being in on Gibson. And I guess after that, we'll go to what should the Leafs do at that point? Should they be putting their full focus into bringing back Jack Campbell? Should they, you know, kind of keep one eye on Campbell, one eye on Husso? What do you think? What's your take on this?
Yeah, I guess we could call this the goalie episode, because everything seems to be revolving around goaltending, and basically every single offseason, the big question mark for the Maple Leafs is goaltending. I mean, based on what happened with Peter Mrazek, you got to find a backup, but your main focus is Campbell. The Campbell situation is interesting, because obviously the line of communication with the Leafs and Campbell is open. Gibson, with the rumor, maybe without the rumor, who knows? Depending on how that plays out, I think the main priority should still be Jack Campbell first and foremost, 100%. I mean, despite the up and downs this season with the hot start, the cool down, but then he picked it back up when it mattered in the playoffs, almost basically having a better performance than Andre Vasilevsky in the first round. I mean, I think we can agree to that, you know, as well as Vasilevsky played, Campbell looked a little bit better, and it was just the mental toughness of the Tampa Bay Lightning and their history vaulted them forward, and Vasilevsky was a beast. He mattered in game 7. It was a one goal differential. It wasn't a blowout, but Vasilevsky is Vasilevsky. So I think I would hope that his heart is set on, like, you know, maintaining his presence in Toronto, you know, being a part of the team. We talked about, or we see how much of a chemistry or how well he gels with Matthews and Marner and everyone else on this team. I think you got to sign him first. What that number is going to be, I don't know. But, you know, depending on what happens, then you should shift your focus to John Gibson. Because let's face it, if Campbell walks elsewhere, you got to make a trade. You're not going to find a goaltender on the open market right now, unless you're probably trying to sign a Darcy Kemper, or I know we've talked about this quite a bit in terms of the positions, but the goaltending free agent class is weak unless you are going after a Marc-Andre Fleury. I don't see that happening. Can you try and go for Braden Holtby? But he's been dealing with his injuries. So the options are very minimal at that point, and you would have to make a trade. And I think John Gibson would be the ideal situation. He's the closest thing that you would get to, you know, a starter caliber goaltender. And everyone's going to look at his numbers and say, oh, he's been bad the last two, three seasons. Yeah, well, guess what? He's been on a retooling Anaheim Ducks team. Defense hasn't been great. Offense is starting to pick up, but let's face it, his numbers are going to take a dip because of that, but he has shown to be a Vezina caliber goaltender. So I think you just got to manage it out. Whatever happens first and whatever happens with Campbell, then the dominoes will follow after that on what you need to do with goaltending.
Yeah, I think regardless of what you think the Leafs should do with their goaltending situation this year, and regardless of how you think they should approach it, I think we can all agree that it comes down to whether or not you can bring back Jack Campbell. Mm-hmm. Because truth be told, if the Leafs can find a way to get rid of Mrazek's contract, I wouldn't necessarily be, and sorry, if they were to find a way to get rid of Mrazek's contract and if they're able to sign Jack Campbell, I wouldn't necessarily be opposed to the idea of bringing in Husso on top of that and running with the tandem of Husso and Campbell. I think that's something
that
I'd
be a solid tandem.
I'd be willing to entertain that, but the instance I don't want to go for Husso in is the one where Jack Campbell doesn't come back and the Leafs are looking to Husso as their number one for next year.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there's all this talk about the Leafs should not sign Jack Campbell to 5 years at $4 million or whatever because he's unproven, which he is, but
small
there are
sample,
guys,
but
there are guys who are more unproven than him, and one of those guys is Ville Husso. So yes, Ville Husso put up some great numbers this year. He obviously, Jordan Binnington refound his form in the playoffs, but Binnington was bad for a lot of the regular season, and Husso ended up taking more starts, and he looked good. To his credit, he looked really good. But if your prime talking point for not bringing back Jack Campbell is that he's unproven and you don't want to commit that kind of money to a goalie who's unproven, then why do you want to commit $3 million to Ville Husso on a three-year deal?
With a guy with only 57 games regular season and 7 playoff experience.
Exactly. It's just, you know, I think that Jack Campbell has proven enough to the Leafs that they can take a flyer on him at slightly more than what he's been making already. I don't know if he's proven enough that I'd want the Leafs to, like I said, commit that four to five million over 4 or 5 years or something to that effect. So yeah, I mean, I look at Husso and I see a guy who's more unproven than Jack Campbell. And you know, if you're bringing back Campbell for a reduced price, say something around $3 million, $4 million, something like that, then sure, bring in Ville Husso and you can have two guys who are looking to obviously, you know, cash out on big contracts. Husso, you know, he might only command $3 million, $4 million or something like that. But if a team gives him an opportunity as a number one goalie over the next 3 or 4 years, and he ends up finding that game over those years, then at the end of that contract, he could probably cash out and look for a deal like, you know, a Vasilevskiy would get or a Hellebuck or something like that, or a Gibson. Having said that, if Campbell doesn't come back to Toronto, then I got to say it's unfortunate in that sense that the Leafs are not in on Gibson, because I wrote an article about why the Leafs should consider bringing in John Gibson if the price was appropriate. And the reality is with Gibson is that there are a lot of risks if you bring in Gibson, because there is the off chance that, yes, while his numbers did go down as Anaheim got worse, you know, if this is who John Gibson is now and the Leafs bring in that kind of money, that contract is enough to kill their rebuild in a sense, or kill their window of contention rather.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's the biggest risk bringing in Gibson. But at the same time, he's only four years removed from when he was one of the best goalies in the league. And four years ago is when the Ducks really started to do that nosedive and started to get worse and worse every year. And I heard a lot of people citing his goal saved against expected analytic. And I don't really like that argument too much, because on another hand, you can look at Carey Price's goal saved above expected in the 2020-2021 regular season. And I believe it was around minus seven. I'm going to search up that article right now just so I don't, you know, I'm not caught spreading misinformation on the podcast. But point is, his goal saved above expected was not good during that regular season. And then look what he did in the playoffs. And he did that because he's Carey Price and he's established that he can be one of the best goalies in the league when he wants to. And Gibson is the exact same way. So you know, I see people being against bringing in Gibson, and yes, it would be a massive risk, but I don't know. I think you give a guy like Gibson a defensive core that the Leafs have compared to the inexperience they have on their back end with Anaheim, and you give him a team that's just more experienced in general and has, you know, more, they're further along in their retooling than Anaheim is. Mm-hmm. I think you can get the Gibson from the mid 2010s. It's just, yeah. So there's a lot of risks involved. I hope that if it becomes apparent that Campbell's not coming back to Toronto, I hope that the Leafs kind of reconsider their stance on bringing in Gibson, because I've said it before and I'll say it again. I think the biggest risk that the Leafs can take, even more than taking Gibson's contract, would be committing the crease to a couple of guys like Husso and, I don't know, Anthony Stolarz, if we want to stick with the Ducks, Casey DeSmith, something like that. Guys who have looked good as backups but need a true opportunity as a starter. I don't want the Leafs to commit that kind of faith, I guess, into guys who aren't proven like that.
Yeah, and you also mentioned the Ducks core too. I mean, obviously they got the forwards intact, but defensively, they don't have Hampus Lindholm. I mean, he could probably re-sign because I know that he's a UFA as well. Could re-sign back there after being traded to Boston, but at the moment, you only have Cam Fowler and Kevin Shattenkirk signed beyond the season, and you have Jamie Draisaitl and Josh Mahura on the roster as well, but you got to fill out that bottom four. And if you're going to try and do that internally, chances are the defense ain't going to be as strong. If John Gibson is coming back as a goaltender in front of that defense, 100%, the Maple Leafs have got the better defensive core than, you know, the Ducks at this point, because you only have four guys signed for next season. And if you were to put, and before I get into my next point, you brought up, you know, the John Gibson of the mid 2010s, or before the decline started to happen. You put him behind this defensive unit, I think it's going to be 10 times better, because the way that Riley has shown progression on both sides of the puck, the way TJ Brody handles two-on-ones, the way that Jake Muzzin kind of bounced back, and we don't know about his situation either, Mark Giordano in the fold, Timothy Liljegren, Rasmus Sandin, those are names that have shown to provide stellar defense in their own zone. And even when they faltered, there's a Vezina-like caliber goaltender or top 10 goaltender in the league to backstop that team. So I honestly think that if there ever comes a time where they need to make a trade or they should consider it, they shouldn't back down from it, because when are you going to find an opportunity? And no matter what the price is, I mean, I've been a firm believer in Gibson, and I think he's going to bounce back on a good team. The Maple Leafs are a good team.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know what? You can make your jokes about, you know, not winning a round or whatever, but the question has never been about the roster. The question's been about the fact that the Leafs are fucking cursed. So regardless of how you write it, the Leafs on paper are a good team, and Gibson would benefit from playing behind them. And just to confirm the expected or goal saved above expected stat that I said before, Carey Price during the regular season last year in 2021, his goal saved above expected was -7.93. For reference, Peter Mrazek's this year was -12. So what that tells me is, and you know, you go back to last season going into the playoffs, you look at that, you look at Carey Price's 901 save percentage, you look at the fact that Montreal is, you know, they didn't even have a record above 500 when they made the playoffs. And everybody was like, oh, Carey Price is washed. The Habs aren't a good team anymore. It's fine. You know, Leafs, this will be a cakewalk for the Leafs. And look what happened. Carey Price turned into vintage Carey Price. So I think when a guy's proven that he can be at that level of goaltending, I think he's more than capable of finding it no matter how bad his stats end up. And yeah. I guess that's where some people might disagree. But I just think that, you know, you look at what Shesterkin did for the Rangers this year. You look what Vasilevsky did for the Lightning. You look at what Thatcher Demko did for the Canucks when they went on that little playoff run in the bubble a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Hot goalie is a hot goalie, and Gibson can be a hot goalie. So, I guess if as of right now, the Leafs are not in on him, that makes sense, because I don't see why they'd be pursuing John Gibson while they're in the middle of negotiating with Jack Campbell. But if Campbell leaves and the Leafs have a need in the crease, they need to revisit that. And whether it's Gibson or a guy like Hellebuyck or a guy like UC Saros, somebody, you got to go for somebody. You don't want to be committing. You don't want to be committing your goal crease to a couple of guys who, you know, aren't proven. So yeah. I guess while we're on the topic of goaltending here, there was another very strange rumor to come out that I want to get your take on. Matt Murray, apparently the Leafs could possibly have interest in him. I don't even remember where that rumor came from, if I'm being honest, but I know that it made the waves on Leafs Twitter.
It made the waves on Leafs Twitter, but it was Chris Johnson that appeared on 1050 that mentioned the rumor.
Right. Okay. So my opinion on Matt Murray is split into two sides of it, and they're on complete opposite sides of the spectrum, depending on a certain factor. And that factor is the money. So I want to know, first of all, what your take is on Matt Murray and the possibility of the Leafs being interested in him.
Yeah, I honestly don't know what to think of that one. I mean, I remember when Murray was becoming a free agent, and basically at the very beginning when we started this podcast, me and Forbes were talking about, you know, Matt Murray and whether the Leafs should try and go after him. At the moment, I thought, you know, back-to-back cup champ, you know, he's got the pedigree, he could work out. But then again, that's when the injuries started to happen with him. And then that's when the production started to decline. He's already in the third year, or going into the third year of his four-year contract that he signed at the end of 2020-21. I don't see this as a really good fit, just based on the history alone, injury-wise, based on the fact that he's been inconsistent even since the time with the Pittsburgh Penguins after those runs. Again, we talk about like not wanting to be a downgrade from Jack Campbell. I honestly think Matt Murray, if they were to go after him, it would be a downgrade from Jack Campbell. Campbell has solidified himself as, well, again, he's already an all-star, solidified himself as that. I don't know what Matt Murray, like, was Matt Murray an all-star? I know he's a cup champ. I don't know if he was an all-star or not.
Couldn't tell you off the top of my head, but I'm sure he was at one point.
Well, there's hockey reference for that. Yeah, 2016-17 all-rookie team, two-time cup winner. So he hasn't been an all-star, but at the same time, that really doesn't matter at this point. But you look at his numbers since 2018-19, they have been below, his save percentages has been below 900 twice, and just above one this year, above 900 this year with 906. I mean, you could, again, bad Ottawa team, but the fact that he was still on a relatively good Pittsburgh team in 2019-20 still had those numbers that really weren't great at all. So, I it's a big risk, just like them trying to take a chance on Ville Husso. I don't see it happening. He's won cups, but I still don't think he's proven himself lately to maintain that consistency. Jack Campbell at least has shown to bounce back. Really haven't seen that from Matt Murray in regards to his play, really trying to build himself back up. And I know, I think he was also dealing with COVID, if I'm not mistaken, previously before too. And that's what maybe led to the demotion. I'm going to backtrack on that if I find the information correctly, but I just can't see it. That to me is more of a risk than going after an unproven goaltender like Husso. That's just the way I see it.
Yeah. I'm kind of in the same boat as you. I look at a guy who's been under the microscope, especially when you're under the microscope in Ottawa, the microscope in Ottawa is much smaller than the microscope in Toronto. So you take what the fire that Matt Murray's been under in Ottawa, and it seems like a nightmare to put him in a market like Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, I would consider the possibility of the Leafs bringing him in if the Senators bought him out and the Leafs signed him to a league minimum contract or something.
Fair enough.
If the Leafs brought back Jack Campbell or went with, if they ended up going with someone like Billy Huso. I don't know. The point is, I think that Matt Murray, when I was saying that John Gibson has established himself as one of the best goalies in the league, I don't think Matt Murray quite has done that. But Matt Murray has certainly shown that he can show up in big games and that he can be that he can be one of the best goalies in the league when the team in front of him shows up and gets it done. So I think that if you have Campbell on one half of your tandem and then you bring in Murray on a contract at around that dollar value, like around less than a million, something like that, then you've got the possibility of Matt Murray becoming the Matt Murray from 2016-17. I get that's a lot to ask for, and it's probably a long shot, but there always is that possibility. So for me, it really comes down to the fact that I don't want the Leafs to, you know, chase that possibility and take that risk if he's making $5 million or whatever it is, or $5 million rather. But at the same time, if he's coming in at a league minimum deal and it's not going to affect the salary cap that much, I don't know why you don't at least give it a shot and just see how that goes. But at the same time, that's asking a lot of things to happen. That's asking Ottawa to buy him out, for the Leafs to have interest in him, which, you know, if that happened, I'm sure they would, because he's a former Sioux Greyhound. And
or even retain salary if they're able to retain at least 50% of that.
Yeah, 50%. But even
maybe high, but at least they may have the cap space to do so for two more years.
Yeah, there is that. But at the same time, I think I'd only want Murray if he was bought out and he was on that super cheap contract. Even I think when it comes to retaining salary, if Murray ends up playing like the Murray he's been in Ottawa for the past couple of years, all of a sudden $2.5 million gets a lot pricier than it seems on the forefront. Yeah. So in that sense, I don't know. I'm not sure I'd want to bring him in, for that kind of money. I think, you know, we're talking about the Leafs taking risks and why they shouldn't be taking risks with their goaltending. The only risk I want them to take is the one that, you know, has the big potential reward in Gibson. And even then, I don't think they'll do that unless Jack Campbell leaves. Or I hope they don't do that unless Jack Campbell leaves.
Everything is all based on Campbell leaving. And going back to what I said about Murray, apparently there was a post where he was placed on the COVID list in November earlier this year. And even Darren Dreger tweeted out, people are talking about the lingering effects of COVID on some NHL players who have had the virus. Matt Murray, as an example, had legit symptoms. So he did feel the effects of that. It may have impacted his play.
Yeah.
And that may have led to, you know, again, the continuing downturn of a season with the compounding of, you know, the poor play with Pittsburgh, Ottawa, now this. So maybe, just maybe, if they are willing to give him, you know, the exception, buy him out and maybe find a fresh start. And if he is a backup on the Maple Leafs, I wouldn't be opposed to that. But if they're looking at him to be a starter, that, again, that's counterintuitive based on what they're trying to do.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's, you know, if they went ahead and did that, it would be almost as if they looked at the way that Peter Mrazek's signing went and learned absolutely nothing from it. And, you know, I just bringing in Matt Murray at whatever he's making, whether it's, I want to say, is it $5 million?
For Murray?
Yeah.
Is it at 6.25.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So I've been undercutting this. That's why.
6.25, yeah.
Hold on. That feels a little bit high. I'm gonna cap friendly this real quick.
I'm looking at cap friendly too.
So it is 6.25?
He signed a 4-year $25 million at 2020-21.
Okay, yeah. Not sure if I would want to bring in Matt Murray and then eventually have to worry about the problem of getting that contract off of the books. And speaking of books, it's on Ontario. DraftKings Sportsbook has arrived. You can now legally bet on all of your favorite sports, from MMA to hockey to playoff hoops and so much more. Bet special parlays, spreads, money lines, and more, plus do it now from anywhere in the province. Join the action, download the app, and explore everything that DraftKings Sportsbook has to offer. To celebrate the pursuit for the Cup, DraftKings Sportsbook is offering a wide variety of betting markets for all of their customers. You can also check out DraftKings' impressive features, including same-game parlays. Select a team and combine multiple bets, like which team will win, goals scored, and more, for a shot to win big. DraftKings is safe, secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want. Get excited, Ontario. DraftKings Sportsbook is live, so go to the App Store and download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now to get in on all the action. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook. If you have a gambling problem, call Connex Ontario at 1-866-531-2600. You must be 19 plus, physically present in Ontario. Eligibility restrictions apply. See sportsbook.draftkings.com for details. Please play responsibly. DraftKings operates pursuant to an operating agreement with iGaming Ontario. You know that I said that line about getting Murray's contract off the books just to make that pun about DraftKings Sportsbook?
I mean, hey, it worked. It worked. I think this is like the back-to-back weeks where, you know, there was a pun related to the DraftKings read. So, hey,
yeah,
if it works, man.
Yeah, and it's, and honestly, Forbes has just absolutely blew me away last week. Like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but I remember it was a pun that lined up perfectly, and I was like, damn, man, you took that opportunity and you ran with it.
The witty wordplay is real on the podcast. Yeah. Telling you that.
Is it ever? We're a witty bunch of folks over here at Sticks and Sticks. All right. So moving on to a little bit of NHL chatter just before we wrap up this episode here. So first and foremost, Peter, the Bolts and the Abs are in the Stanley Cup final. Let's get some thoughts on that series, and then we'll close things off with a prediction as we've been doing.
Oh, how exciting was that first game?
Crazy.
I mean, the last two Stanley Cup playoffs have been very underwhelming. I mean, last year against the Canadians, it was no contest. Tampa Bay was winning that. Dallas had a good, you know, Cinderella run, but they weren't supposed to be in that position. It was technically probably supposed to be in that bubble, Colorado and Tampa Bay. And now we're getting that Colorado-Tampa Bay matchup, and it is absolutely phenomenal. You know, both teams are great on offense and defense. Tampa Bay obviously has the edge in goaltending with Vasilevskiy, but Darcy Kuemper proved to be victorious in game one. We'll see what happens in game two, but hey, this is the playoff series that we wanted. Two offensive juggernauts going at it, and I'm all for it. Bring on game two, three, four, five, six, seven, whatever.
So who are you cheering for in this series?
Okay. I not to be kind of biased, but I'm going Colorado in seven. Mainly because, well, let's face it, I want the dynasty to continue for Tampa Bay, but at the same time, I don't because of the Leafs in the first round. Yeah, I get it. But
but then there's also the loser mentality path that you can take for that too and be like, well, if Tampa Bay wins the cup, then the Leafs lost to the best team in the league, the team that
exactly
went all the way,
right? Exactly. And not only that, if Toronto won against Tampa Bay, I think they would be in this spot, but that's a conversation for a different day. I really want to see Nazem Kadri lift the cup.
That
to me is the main reason why. I mean, again, Tampa Bay could win it all alone because they got that winner mentality. But I can't believe I can't remember who said it. I think it was one Colorado Avalanche. I think it was either Landeskog or MacKinnon or Makar. I think it was one of those three that, you know, they're trying to continue the legacy.
It was Makar.
He said that they're trying to continue their legacy. We're trying to build one.
Yeah.
That is the winner mentality right there that breeds championships. And the fact that he said that shows that Colorado is going all in, and even the physicality was amped. And I saw Makar lay a few big hits, and even though he's not known for it, he can be physical. So adding the fact that I want Nazem Kadri to win the cup, you know, based on his time with Toronto, the playoff issues that he's had with suspensions and everything like that, he tamed himself down. He was playing well until he had that thumb injury. He's skating. I hope he could come back and play. I don't know how well he's going to be, but I just want to see him on the ice and lift the cup.
I would love Nazem Kadri to come back for game seven and score the overtime winner. Could you imagine?
Yeah,
man,
that'll just be poetic.
I will,
especially
forever,
after that St. Louis series. That'll be poetic.
I will forever be a Kadri fan. I want Colorado to win as well. And you know what? But at the same time, there's a part of me that is embracing that loser mentality where it's like, okay, if Tampa wins, I won't be mad because then the Leafs lost to the best team in the league. Jesus, listen to us. But then
we're really deep now, man.
We are down horribly, down horrendously. So but at the same time, yeah, I do. I want to see Naz win it. Like, I think when, you know, when you take out the fact that I'm a Leafs fan and you just, you look at the two teams on paper, I want to see Colorado finally win it. They've been my pick to win the cup for a couple of seasons now. Every year I think, okay, Colorado looks really good this year. They're going to, they're finally going to get it done. And then they had their own second round curse all the way up until this year. And now they finally kicked down the second round curse and then they won the conference final. And honestly, I think that this could be the year that the Avs finally, they finally do it. We've talked all this time about, you know, when the Leafs finally went around, they're going to go on a run. I think we're seeing that with Colorado right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've got everything that a coach could dream of. They've got a young and mobile and exciting defensive core that has a whole bunch of different aspects, because you've got the guys like Cale Makar and Samuel Girard, even though he's injured right now, who do the puck moving. You've got the guys who can throw bone-shaking hits like Josh Manson. You've got the guys who are there for the veteran presence like Eric Johnson. And then you look at their forward group. They've got all their they've got their talented names up front. They've got all the depth scoring. I love Arturi Lehkonen, man.
Yeah.
This guy shows up in the playoffs, and he did so for Colorado.
The new Justin Williams?
He could be. I mean,
showing up in key moments.
Yeah, he scored the overtime winner in the conference finals against Vegas last year for Montreal, and then again against Edmonton this year. Mm-hmm. So you're going to go Tampa in Colorado in seven games. I'm going to say Colorado in seven as well. And I'm not just saying that because I like agreeing with you on things as much as I do, but I'm also saying that just because I think that I think that if you're finally going to tame the beast, it has to be in the most excruciating, grueling way ever. Mm-hmm. And the most excruciating, grueling way to take down the Tampa Bay Lightning is to do it in seven games. So yeah. I think Colorado is going to, they're going to grind their way to that game seven. Once we eventually get there, I can't wait to watch. It'll be an exciting game for sure. And I love how you mentioned that the last couple of Stanley Cups just haven't been great. You know, we talk about, you know, the playoff format and getting the most exciting teams to face off in the final. And that is what we're seeing. The two most exciting teams in hockey facing off. And I can't wait for the, to see how it plays out.
Colorado's only lost two games these playoffs.
That's insane.
And this is also where, you know, Kemper had that eye injury against Nashville, where he had that other injury against the Blues, I believe, or the Oilers. I can't remember which one. But he's dealt with his fair share of injuries, and he's still coming back, and he's still powering through. And also, you mentioned the Avalanche and how they've had their woes in the second round. They easily could have blown up the core and say, you know what, it's not working for, you know, two, three seasons early exits when we should be going deep into the playoffs. That happened with Tampa Bay. They stuck with their core. That happened with Washington. They stuck with their core. Colorado's in it right now. They're three games away. The Maple Leafs have talked about they want to stick with their core. This is probably the next line in succession of teams who have stuck with their core after multiple years of playoff failure that can turn it around.
I don't disagree.
There's a pattern.
Yeah, there is.
There's
a pattern.
Pattern.
You know, I don't know when the last time a team made a bone-shaking move like that. And it's funny, I actually saw a tweet from a Tampa Bay Lightning fan back in 2019 after they lost to the Blue Jackets in the first round. And I got to tell you, I'm just going to pull the tweet up right now because it was so funny because the guy didn't even realize it, but he just quoted the entirety of Leafs Twitter. Here it is. One word, Lightning, nuke. Blow it up. You aren't winning with Cooper. You aren't winning with this core. You aren't winning with how mentally fragile your team is. Just purge everything.
Yeah, sounds like the current Maple Leafs right now.
Mm-hmm.
Sounds like Leaf
Nation,
yeah.
Everything down to the mentally fragile part, down to the winning with this core part, to you're not winning with the coach part. I'm just, it makes me feel good to know that there is hope if they don't do that, if they don't blow up the team.
Absolutely.
All right, one final note on this episode, Peter. And it's once again time for us to play the game of how does this affect the Leafs. The salary cap is going to be going up to $82.5 million for 2022-2023. Remind me again, it's at 81 right now, right?
Yeah.
All right. So how does that extra $1.5 million affect the Leafs?
I mean, it helps them out anyway. Yeah. $1 million is $1 million that can like be used to sign a key depth player, add another extra million to a player that you want to stay, maintain on the roster and keep them happy and remain in the fold. It's not just big for the Leafs, it's big for everybody too. So the fact that it's going up to 80, going up another million, and I think the goal is for it to continue to go up 1 million and have it be consistent and maintain and just continue to grow the salary cap based on the production and the revenue of the league. The fact that it's already starting to happen right now after what we saw with the pandemic, you know, 2021 was bad. This season kind of kicked everything off. Yeah, there's a little hiccup here and there, but the revenue was great. So if this is continuing in the right direction, hey, the salary cap is just going to, if it continues to go up, it's only going to work in the Maple Leafs' favor. And other teams who are, you know, starting to show some cap being, you know, pushed up that up the cap as well. Vegas, Tampa Bay. Yeah, all those teams right now, and even teams that are looking like that are pushing that limit, they're, that extra $1 million is going to be great relief to try and help them out no matter what.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think especially with the pandemic, this the cap going up was very desperately needed because it was in a rhythm up until the pandemic started. And obviously, you know, you can rip on league officials all you want, rip on GMs, owners, whatever, but nobody could see a pandemic coming. So that was just one of those things. And also on that note, the old prof, one of our treasured Leafs writers over at the Hockey Writers, wrote a great article on why, you know, Leaf fans should stop blaming Kyle Dubas for their problems. And, you know, when prof,
they never article, will. Well, everyone's still going to hate on Dubas.
When prof wrote that article, I was like, first of all, I was like, dude, you've got balls of steel. Knowing what the fans of the Hockey Writers have to say. And I didn't actually go through and read the comments, but I pulled it up and I went and looked at how many he got. It was like the day after, and there was like 167 comments on it.
And all 160 comments hate Dubas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Typically the ones who are in the comment sections are the ones that don't like Kyle Dubas and want toughness and want Canadians. And you know, the type of fan that I'm describing right now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, it was a great, sorry, I kind of got sidetracked there. The reason I say that the prof's article was so great is because he factored in that the pandemic was a big part of why, you know, certain moves are affecting the Leafs and hurting Leafs worse now. They have less cap space to work with because they signed those Matthews and Marner and Nylander to those deals before the pandemic, and then the cap froze.
Yeah.
So that's just one thing right there. But if you want a real good outlook on everything, go read the prof's piece. It's a real, real good article.
If anything, if everything was going according to plan, aside from the pandemic, that cap would have gone up that year as well at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for hindsight.
Sure. Yes, sir. Well, that's more or less wraps up our episode for today. Thank you to everybody for tuning in, even though we were without Forbes. I know. If I were listening to the episode and I didn't hear Andrew's voice, I'd want to stop listening to you. So if you're still here, thank you for sticking around with us for the ride. You can follow Peter on Twitter at PBarrichini. You can follow myself at AHobson Media, or you can follow the pod at Get Ready. I'm going to try and do this the way Forbes says. At STIXINTHAPOD6IX. I think I got that right. Let me try one more time. You can follow the pod on Twitter at STIXTHEIN6IXPOD. Sticks in the 6IX pod.
Yeah. STIXINTHE6IX pod.
Yes. Okay, so I got it right. I got it right.
There you go.
There you go. All right, Andrew, I'm coming for your job. All right. Once again, thank you to everybody for listening. Don't forget to check us out wherever you get your podcasts, whether that's Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, you know the list.
iHeartRadio.
Yes, iHeartRadio as well. Thank you very much for listening, and we will catch you next time for episode 88, the William Nylander episode of Sticks in the Six.